What are some of the myths of gospel reductionism? I've written part two of an article titled Better Than Good, Failed Attempts to Improve on the Gospel in the latest issues, etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Joy Pullman of The Federalist writes about her journey from charismatic experientialism to confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
The Bible tells us how good and pleasant it is when God's people live together in unity.
When you do not have people in America who believe in America's uniting founding ideals, you don't have America anymore.
Jesus, unlike any other individual ever in history, came back from the dead. That places Christ in a category with no one else.
Luther's great legacy is that we are beggars. We bring nothing. Simply to thy cross I cling.
Radio operators, commercial and amateur alike, just love Issues Etc.
It seems to say something. I was following Twitter over the last couple days after the inauguration. The most commonly seen picture, besides the stock photos of Donald Trump at the inauguration, were these long shots from the Washington Monument, the aerial view, so to speak, facing back toward the Capitol, where we have the inauguration crowds. And the comparison, the side-by-side comparison, of course, is between the first inauguration of Barack Obama and the recent inauguration of President Trump. And, well, the picture said it all. One, the mall is filled, and the second one, it's not filled. It's crowded, but not filled. And then we had the debate over the number of women in Washington, D.C. for the Women's March in Washington, D.C. as compared to, well, at least prospectively, what the crowd numbers and what the media will report in terms of crowd numbers for the March for Life coming up on Friday this week. Do the numbers matter? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Wednesday afternoon, January the 25th. Pastor Hans Feeney is going to join us first to talk about media and White House disagreements over crowd sizes. Why does the media care? Why does the White House care? Dr. Michael New will join us after that, author of a recent column for National Review Online titled World Health Organization Study on Mexico City Policy is Flawed. We'll talk about whether or not the reinstatement of the Mexico City policy will, as some critics have said, actually increase the number of abortions overseas. Pastor David Peterson joins us to look forward to Sunday morning, according to the one-year lectionary, focusing on the gospel reading where Jesus calms a storm in Matthew 8. Then Joy Pullman will round everything off for us. She's written recently for the Federalist about the clash of transgender and feminist ideologies at the Women's March in Washington, D.C. and nationwide. Feel free to join us with questions or comments over the course of the next 2 hours. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc. Or our beloved on-demand listeners, whenever, wherever you listen, use the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Pastor Hans Feeney is a regular guest. He joins us to talk about media and White House disagreement over crowd sizes. He's pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, and senior contributor to The Federalist and author of a recent column there. The media, Sean Spicer, fight over crowd numbers is all about insecurity. Hans, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Two-part question. Why do the media care about the crowd numbers, either at the inauguration or the Women's March, the March for Life? Why does the White House care?
Well, I think the answer is the same for both of them, in that they've both accepted a false premise about the importance of crowd numbers. So the media, which is predominantly kind of left-leaning and is certainly rather hostile towards the Trump administration, I think wants to look at the lower crowd numbers for the Trump inauguration and say, see, look, at you didn't have nearly as many people as President Obama did. You didn't have nearly as many people as the Women's March did. Therefore, what we're going to kind of read into this is that you know, this isn't a mandate to rule. This isn't this is an indication that you're not a beloved president. That this was just some sort of, you know, kind of weird electoral fluke that you managed to get in, and so therefore we have the, you know, we kind of have the right to keep you in check and to question sort of the legitimacy of your right to wield the executive power. And I think, likewise, the Trump administration seems to be accepting that same premise, but refusing to accept the fairly obvious numbers about it, which is that there weren't you know, quite as many folks. So just kind of, you know, it's quite possible that, and I've seen people saying when you see these kind of side-by-side comparisons, that they're taken at different times of the day, you know, a while before the speech actually starts, and so you don't have the crowds really kind of filled in. You know, be sort of like comparing NFL stadiums, you know, where one of the pictures is, you know, right, you know, right as the game begins, and or, you know, 15 minutes into the game, and then the other is, you know, 45 minutes before kickoff or something of that nature. And there might be some legitimate criticisms there, but the Trump administration still seems to be accepting the premise that a bunch of people turning out for the inauguration, that the number of people turning out for the inauguration is somehow corollary to the number of people who actually support President Trump and his policies. So I think it's a faulty assumption.
So both the media and at least kind of the press wing of the Trump administration so far seem to believe that these visible numbers that can be seen in pictures somehow represent, at least in part, a mandate of sorts.
Right, yeah. So the idea is that if you have a bunch of people there, that is an indication of your popularity and your mandate to rule.
Why do you say, in essence, well, there's just about anything else they could debate, the media and the Trump administration at this point, that would be more helpful?
Well, yeah, so basically my point in the article is, and the analogy I use is, that if it'd be like if Mormons and Catholics had an argument, got into an argument as to which of them was more devoted to their religion. And Mormons said, well, we're more devoted because we knock on more doors than you guys do. And the Catholics said, no, that's ridiculous. We knock on even more doors than you guys do. And this would be a silly fight to have because, one, we all know that Catholics don't knock on as many doors as Mormons do. We've all had Mormons come knocking on our doors and evangelizing in the street, and Roman Catholics don't do that. But the reality is that doesn't mean that Mormons are more committed. It just means that their theology guides them to basically act out their devotion in different ways. So for Mormons, where they don't have professional clergy and they believe that personal testimonials are really important for growing the church, that's the stuff that they focus on, and so they're going to knock on more doors, whereas Roman Catholics have a, you know, much stronger understanding and a much or have a much heavier focus on the importance of the clergy and the importance of the sacramental system of the church. So that's the stuff that they focus on. So you can have equal parts piety and equal parts devotion, but it's going to manifest itself in different ways. And so similarly with politics, my hypothesis or my theory is that a liberal mindset is going to incline you more so to show up for protests and for rallies and marches. And people who have a much more conservative mindset, they don't manifest their devotion to their beliefs in the same way by showing up for big rallies. They tend to kind of keep things more personal and low scale and just kind of keep to themselves as far as making their primary focus, working sort of within their own communities and in particular in their own families.
So the solution, the liberal solution to bad government, or what they perceive as bad government, is protest, is gathering, is kind of overpowering them by sheer numbers.
Right. So one of the assertions I make is that I think liberals have a tendency to view the government as something outside of themselves. And so it's a little bit, so the way they view a hostile government is that you do whatever it is that you do, that thing that people say you're supposed to do for whichever kind of bear it is. I never can quite figure this out, if it's brown bears or grizzly bears or whatever. And if you get it wrong, then the bear's going to eat you. So it's hard to kind of keep inventory of it. But that idea, there's some kind of bear that if you make yourself really big and loud, that the bear will run away. You can basically trick the bear into thinking that you're bigger than the bear is. And so I think the point of in a lot of liberal mindsets is the government is an institution of power outside of us. And so in order to get the government to do what we want, we need to show the government that we're big and powerful and that it needs to yield and submit to us. We sort of need to scare the bear back off into the woods to get it doing what it is that we want. Whereas conservatives more so tend to see the government as themselves, and that when the government becomes hostile, that the problem is that it's no longer a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. I mean, I think you saw this a lot in kind of the Tea Party rallies, which kind of bucked the trend of conservatives not rallying together. That was I think, kind of much more of the focus, is that we want to get the government representing us again, as opposed to the idea of we want the government submitting to us again.
Just as a side note, the March for Life's coming up on Friday in Washington, D.C. is its primary location. But like the Women's March on Washington, it takes place in major city centers and small towns all over the place. And do you expect equanimity from the media in terms of the reporting, the photographing of the numbers? And March for Life usually breaks a lot of records.
No, of course not. Don't be ridiculous, Todd. No, of course. I mean, the reality is that, and that's kind of, I think, part of the thing that's frustrating about this, is that the media wants to make a big deal about numbers when it fits their narrative, but they don't when it doesn't. And the March for Life is a huge deal, because not only does it happen every year, and you know, you normally got, you know, 500,000 or even more. It's as if I believe the numbers, you know, a couple of years ago they had about 600,000 people there. I mean, so first of all, you have conservative people, although not all of them would certainly call themselves traditionally conservative, but conservative people doing something that's a bit outside of their comfort zone and outside of their nature, and something where the kind of the uniqueness of it isn't wearing off, so that you know, the fact that this is happening this is kind of one of the odd things I've heard about the lack of media coverage. Is they kind of go, well, yeah, that sort of happens every year, so there's nothing notable about it, except for the fact that, well, if it happens every year and this many conservatives are actually still coming to it, then that's actually probably a fairly notable thing, because it means that their passion and their zeal isn't waning, and that they are actually gaining cultural ground in the influence of their position. So it's certainly worth coverage, I would imagine, but it certainly won't get any, because it doesn't, it's like what you oftentimes see in Lutheran churches, where if you have a church that's growing quite rapidly by doing nothing other than using the hymnal, magically it's as though for many people in the synod it doesn't exist.
Okay, so that also explains why the media is hesitant to cover the numbers of the March for Life, because, as you said, the media's liberal mindset is numbers do really mean something. And if we report on this, we have to at least tacitly admit that abortion is not really popular in America.
Yeah, I mean, that's though assuming that they're the tacit acknowledgement. The problem with that is that when you're playing Calvin ball and you make up the rules as you go along, that's oftentimes what you're dealing with in these things. And so, you know, numbers matter until they don't. It's, you know, narratives are consistent until they don't. Until being consistent would defeat the purpose of the narrative. So that's kind of what you're dealing with.
Talk about the degree to which liberal causes make for professional protesters.
Yeah, well, I mean, so there are, there's a good amount of evidence. I linked a piece by our friend Mark Hemingway in the article about how, you know, there's a good amount of evidence that there are actually sort of professional left-wing protesters and people who are, you know, funding a lot of this making it possible for people to be amassing in these places. And that's definitely something that there seems to be a good amount of evidence for the fact that that's a thing that actually exists on the left. And there's not really that same kind of concept on the right.
Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. We're talking about media and White House disagreement over crowd sizes and why it may or may not matter on this Wednesday afternoon, January the 25th. He is senior contributor to The Federalist and author of a recent column there, The Media, Sean Spicer, Fight Over Crowd Numbers is All About Insecurity. Stay tuned.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
What are some of the myths of gospel reductionism? I've written part two of an article titled Better Than Good, Failed Attempts to Improve on the Gospel in the latest issue's Etc. Journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Joy Pullman of The Federalist writes about her journey from charismatic experientialism to confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. Journal.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry, lcms.org/deaconess.
Come listen to Drs. Alvin Schmidt and Roland Elke at the 3rd Annual Concordia Apologetics Conference, Cultures in Collision, Faith and a Fractured World, this March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin. You can register online at www.cuw.edu/apologetics or call 262-243-4343. That's the Concordia Apologetics Conference, March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media and White House disagreement over crowd sizes. Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. Hans, we've been talking with Dr. Peter Burfind. He's author of a book called Gnostic America, and he's made an observation about millennials and I think applicable to liberals in general, that for them, government is God. Does that help explain what we're seeing here in terms of protest numbers?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's something that's necessarily just limited to liberals, although you do see it often. I forget who said this line, the line that people are incurably religious, but it's certainly true, and even when people will claim no religion, or if they view themselves as kind of primarily secular, or they don't go to any kind of church building on a regular basis or things of that nature, the reality is that people do... As Luther kind of talks about in his small catechism, your God is where your faith, your hope, and your trust are all. Your faith, your love, and your trust are all directed. So there is, I think, something of a, as I said, when I said before that liberals have a tendency to view the government as something that's outside of themselves. This tends to kind of fit well with that theory that it's the idea is that well, government is your God. But it's also not always a benevolent God, and you kind of need to remind it to be nice and sort of. So it's almost like these, you're gathering together with sort of the worship songs and in your protest chants and things of this nature, and this is sort of a way that you're kind of offering up your song of praise. So yeah, I think there's certainly a sense in which government is God, or rather. That they're kind of abstract ideas of justice are God, and that the government is the means through which those are distributed. So in a sense, there's perhaps a way in which the government is more church than it necessarily is God.
Well, I think it's a better way of saying the government is church, so then protest can be your highest form of worship, and
right.
If things are going well, like for the last 8 years, not showing up to protest in Washington, D.C., can also be a form of worship.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah. Or simply as it was with President Obama, who had obviously large crowds for in particular his first inauguration, that if government is God, or if government is church and justice is God, kind of however this is, that this is sort of kind of like showing up for the ordination of the new pope of this church, or kind of things of that nature. So that there's So that there's more of a compulsion, I think, on people who kind of have this this understanding of government as something outside of ourselves, that are where they're just going to be more naturally inclined to show up for stuff like that.
What do you make of the element of insecurity in this issue of numbers, both the White House and the media?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, as I said, that there seems to be just kind of this issue is sort of needling, you know, that the press isn't so much, as I said in the article, it's not when the press is pointing out that there aren't as many people at the inauguration, which to me is as, I get, because this is the thing I find frustrating about it, is they act as though we don't know what the election results were, as that, you know, that it was just as though it was a cosmic flip of a coin that's not somehow reflecting the will of the people that Donald Trump was elected. So of course we know about how divided the country is, which is quite. We know that President Trump won the Electoral College and not the popular vote, but that even with the votes that he didn't win, it's still pretty close. So we know that we're fairly divided. And so by citing the fact that you know, they've got that he had smaller crowds, when you're dealing with a guy who has shown, with a president who during his time running has shown himself to be rather quick to respond to observations of that nature, I think what you've got is you don't have, this is not important information that the media is throwing out there. It's a relatively useless observation that doesn't tell you anything about the state of American culture or politics. So it's not the media speaking truth to power. It's the media speaking snark to insecurity. It's them pointing out something that they know is going to annoy the president, who probably shouldn't get annoyed by stuff like this. And then you get a response from the White House that seems to be insecurity, just kind of lobbing the ball right back to them.
Well, then, can we expect, we've got four more years of Donald Trump's administration and a media that is still seeming to come to grips with the reality of that situation, and then, of course, that divide in the country, half the country just not really wanting to accept the fact? What can we expect for the next 4 years in terms of fighting over things like more people showed up for mine than for yours?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's some who theorize, and perhaps rightly so, that all the Trump administration is really doing with this is knowing how to rile up the media and get them in a tailspin and get them just kind of distracted as he's beginning to go about the business of accomplishing the goals that he wants to accomplish. And, you know, he's already issued, obviously, a number of executive orders and things of this nature. So it's kind of, you know, dividing and conquering is perhaps part of the approach there. So maybe there's something a bit more to this than just the level of insecurity that I think is still an issue. But yeah, I'm not expecting the relationship between the Trump administration and the media to get any better, at least until the media figures out if this is in fact a tactic that the Trump administration is utilizing, it's working very well. So, and until the media can kind of recognize that they have a really bad reputation as far as objectivity is concerned, and until they can kind of fix that reputation with the American people, going to be an uphill climb to have a terribly harmonious relationship with an administration that's just simply going to utilize that weakness as long as it's there. In particular, I think, because I don't know within the Democratic Party that there's a real strong centralized resistance to the Trump administration. So I think until that's the case, that the media is going to be serving in that capacity. And Donald Trump has shown he's quite adept at kind of using judo moves and sort of throwing them on their own backside when they try to play this type of game.
What is this, finally, what does this do to this kind of the state of public discourse?
It's not helpful. This is the thing, is that even if what the Trump administration is doing is deliberate in order to accomplish its agenda, it's still juvenile. And likewise, the media, I think, would do well to try and just to get out of their own way and to stop sort of making things about themselves, and to, as I say, just kind of acknowledge some of the problems with objectivity that they've had. And I think until stuff like that can happen, you're just going to see people kind of living in echo chambers and and people, you know, taking whatever spin on the news that they think fits their preconceived notions of what's going on. And social media is obviously not helpful with that, because that's really blurred the distinction between kind of real, genuine, legitimate news and commentary, and then just anybody with an internet connection being able to kind of throw up an article on whatever. So I'm not terribly optimistic that the relationship is going to improve.
Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire. He's senior contributor to The Federalist and author of a recent column there. The media, Sean Spicer fight over crowd numbers, is all about insecurity. You'll find a link to it and to Lutheran Satire under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Hans, thanks for being our guest.
Hey, thanks so much.
Dr. Michael New joins us on the other side of the break. The critics of the reinstatement of the Mexico City policy that would curtail money going outside the United States to fund abortion and promotion of abortion, the critics of that have said that it will actually increase abortions, and it's done so before. We'll see whether that's true with Dr. Michael New, author of a recent column on National Review Online about the World Health Organization's study on the Mexico City policy.
It is the greatest adventure you could ever possibly imagine. It's demanding, it's hard, it's challenging, and what a blessing it is.
Dr. Larry Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on why a man should consider the vocation of pastor.
And it is an incredible blessing to be honored with the opportunity to work with these incredible young men and older men as well, who are committing themselves to the proclamation of God's word, the right distinction of law and gospel, and to take the good news of Jesus Christ into all the world.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
The 500th anniversary of the Reformation approaches. A good time to ask, who are we as Confessional Lutherans? What's our heritage? The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission has produced the Layman's Guide to Theological History. Go to the CLCC.org and see which of these presentations and books would be most helpful to you and your fellow parishioners. And consider becoming a member with us as the CLCC seeks to help more people know what it means to be a Confessional Lutheran. The CLCC.org.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
St. Jacobi Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Wisconsin has a special guest each and every week. It isn't you, but it is Jesus Christ. He is a guest, and he is also the one who comes to serve you with his preached word and his broken body and shed blood. You are invited to be served by Jesus on Saturday evening at 6:30 and Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Visit www.stjakobi.org for more information.
Celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation with the new Martin Luther plush figure. It features the 16th century reformer holding the Bible and Luther's morning and evening prayers. Go to reformationgear.com, use the coupon code ISSUESETC, and 20% of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. ReformationGear.com, the new Martin Luther plush figure, ReformationGear.com, and enter the coupon code ISSUESETC.